You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This podcast is brought to you by IG, a global leader in online trading and authorized financial services provider. The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Tuesday, it's the doubleheader dream team of David Shapiro, Deputy Chairman at Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, accompanied by Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth, also in the City of Gold. And again, it incorporates the Tuesday trade brought to you by IG South Africa. That is now, David, first of all, how was it? Your fast, that is. I wished you well over the fast. I wished you good Yom Tov.
Thank you.
Did those blessings come to you?
We'll see in the next year. You see, what happens is the Jewish custom is that on Rosh Hashanah, God decides what your life's going to be for the next year.
Yes.
So he's already inscribed it on the book. And at Rosh Hashanah, and on Yom Kippur, he seals it. So during that week, you've got to be really good and behave yourself. But yesterday, it's sealed for what lies ahead. So we'll see how it unfolds, whether or not your blessings help.
Well, I'm sure they can't have done any harm because they were heartfelt. But anyway, you got through the fast,
how
okay.
How can you say that? How can you say that? As soon as Yom Kippur was over, Arsenal play Liverpool and get wiped.
Yes, I know, so but there's more to life than football. Not in my life, but in certain other people's life.
No. What was the famous Liverpool management?
Bill Shankly. Bill Shankly says, what was the famous saying that he said? Some people say there's more to
life. It's a matter of life and death.
Football is a matter of life and death. It's more important than that.
It's actually more important than that.
Exactly right. We eventually got it out. Anyway, Nick, how was the day today?
Rubbish, actually. It was really directionless. In fact, the choppiness we've seen over the last couple of trading sessions sort of dissipated today. It sort of was really sort of, it was choppy for the first hour or two, and then as the day progressed, I think everyone waiting for the debate, sitting on their hands. I mean, yesterday I had to do a double take. I thought there was something wrong with the volume. It was 14.6 billion value traded. Today was 16.9. There really is this sense of everyone waiting for something to happen. As I say, after all this wild volatility and the VIX flying, all the rest of it, huge swings in the rand, today was, I don't know if it's the calm before the storm, gentlemen, but it was very, very quiet. Eerily so.
Okay, David, go on.
No, I'm saying, you know when you talk about volatility, what concerns me now is that the numbers have just come out from New York. They've spiked about 3%. This is the outbreak of virus of, COVID. And I think that's just shaken the market a little. Whether it can recover from it or not, I don't know. But it was a toss-up between whether the Democrats would get through something, would meet on a stimulus package or
They're meeting tomorrow. Pelosi and Mnuchin are meeting tomorrow to talk. But it sounds like I think people are looking for an answer now instead of saying tomorrow.
We've come down, eh? We opened up and we're starting to stabilize. I'm talking the S&P is now down a third of a percent.
Well, it was up at one point, yeah.
Yeah, and that's because I think these cases are starting to spike. People getting really nervous of what this means in the U.S. So, and why I say it, Lindsay, is that, you take down notes. I'm looking at the market now, taking down notes. You write down there that the S&P is up like 0.3 or 0.4. Before you turn around, it's down 0.3, 0.4. Say, okay, that's what we're going through. So you turn your eye, you turn your head for a second, and the market has swung direction. And I think that just confirms what Nick has been saying about our market. It's just all over the place.
Okay, on that note, my Tuesday trade, it's been a toss-up in the last couple of hours between me going short of one bank and long of another. And the reason I want to go short of one particular bank is it's because of the bank, it's the bank that I bank with, and their service is unbelievably poor. And so I just, out of spite, I want to go short of them and long of another one. But I think I don't want to initiate a trade through spite, because that's childish. So what I want to do, Nick, and you can help me here, is I want to go long of the volatility. In my dummy account, before I started the real thing, I went long of the vol, and it was more or less a flat trade, just to a slight loss. But now the real thing, I want to go long of the vol over the next couple of months. How do I do it?
Okay, so the easiest way to do it is to buy a volatility index, which is a contract. Yes. The most traded contract is called the VIX, which is a future. So you can buy that as traded on the CME in Chicago. It's a normal tradable contract. You buy it as if you buy anything else. It's currently trading at about 26.5 to 27% implied vol. So the volatility is in fact, if you want the full definition for those who are listening, it is your 30 days implied vol of your at the money options for the S&P 500. So they take the at the money strikes. So if the S&P 500, if you have something like Microsoft, they'll take what the implied volatility of that option is at the money, and they'll take the average over 500 of the S&P 500, and then give you an average. So it's a very nice way to get access to if you think the market is going to be shaky. So I think it's a good trade. So currently it's trading at 26.7% implied vol.
Okay, but have you got a bid offer there so I can take the offer, and after we finish this, I'm going to go to my IG account and have a look at it and then go ahead.
Give me one sec. I'll bring up a double on my trading screen. I'll give you a quote.
Yes.
For you, I'll give you the best price.
Of course you can.
Special price
for you, Mr. Williams, a special. Yeah, here we go.
Okay, so, and bearing in mind, just so people know, you can buy volatility in most places. Even the South African market has what they call the SAVIT. It's not as liquid, but we also have our own version of volatility.
That's very good. Okay.
Okay, so... Okay, so it's 26.70 bid offered at 26.78.
Okay, well, let's call it 26.80. And after, as I say, after this podcast, I'll initiate the trade. But anyway, 26.80. So just write that down. Mm. So just to let you know, I'm short the S&P via a December put, a 3,400 put, the big one, the 500. I'm short of the Rand at 16.75. Was it 16.76? Nick, you're my unofficial accountant here.
You've actually kind of doubled up, because when you buy a put, you're actually buying volatility as well.
I want to double up.
So you're all in on the downside, because you're basically, because as the markets crash, you expect volatility to pop. So your put will go up and your volatility will go up. So it's like a double trade. So you're basically all in. That we're looking for a little shunt.
Except that I'm also long of Investec Limited, so I've got a little bit of upside potential there as well. Mm. So I've got that. But yes,
yeah, like
it's skewed to that. Anyway, so it's a good thing. Right, let's have a look at the spot prices if we can. The Rand has recovered somewhat. It was about 17.15. That's another one that's been having
recovered a lot.
16.93 is the dollar Rand. That's a 1.2% rally for the Rand and fall for the dollar. British pound against the Rand is 21.75. Euro Rand is 19.87. And Euro dollar, 117.40. That's a really, really big move. The euro has rallied by nearly 1% against the US dollar, and that's a really big story. And I wonder why that is. We'll come to you in a moment, David. The Dow Jones, actually, Dow Jones, S&P is NASDAQ. David, can I go to you for the live prices? Because I'm delayed here.
We need the live prices. I've got it on my phone, but I can't get them.
Okay, well, I'll go to Nick.
I've got 15 minutes delay. I mean, 15 minutes delay.
Oh, same as me then. So let's go to the yuppie in at Sanlam.
with the rich, with the screens.
My overpriced Reuters screen. Okay, so live prices from the overpriced Sanlam. Down 0.5% on the S&P 500, down 16 points, 33.329. As David said, it is on the lows of the session after being sort of flat about half an hour ago. Dow Jones is down 0.61. It's down 168 points, 27.415. And the Nasdaq's interesting. The Nasdaq up almost 0.25% on the open, one of the few that was in the green, is now down. I have it down almost 0.7%, and it's knocking on that sort of 11,000 level, 11,091. So looking a little bit weak, a little bit of a reversal happening.
On the commodities front, we've got the gold price up $28 an ounce to $18.88 because of that dollar story. And we've got platinum is up $50 an ounce to $8.81. Where's palladium, please, Nick?
That is also up nicely at 2.6%, $2,311, $50 higher.
Okay, now here's the thing, and this is good for South Africa. So we've got platinum and palladium and gold all up. I've got West Texas down 3.25% at $39.29. Good for South Africa as an oil importer. Brent crude oil down 2.75% at $41.30. Can anyone explain that? As there have been some figures out from whatever? I don't know. What is that? Why is that down and the rest of them up?
I think there's a worry about demand. And I don't know. I can't read the inventory. You know, I don't really read the inventory reports and that. But I think at the moment there's a deep concern about demand as well. And I think we're just going to hover around these kind of levels now. There hasn't been any form in oil for some time now.
Yes.
So I don't know. You know, one day if inventories are up, oil price goes down. If they're down, the oil price goes up. But it's very marginal. I think the big worry, Lindsay, if you've got a, you know, if you've got a global economy that's just stuttering and stammering, it's going to be very hard to see oil price pick up. Mm. I suppose a lot depends on PMIs that we get out of China tomorrow. You know, if you do see things happening there, maybe it'll help. But I don't know. I don't know how.
There was. I mean, there was actually a conference today. I'll sort of every now and again checking the headlines. So Goldman Sachs was hosting the annual FT Commodities Global Summit.
Ah, there we go.
And it's quite a biggie. And we had all the top boys from Vitol and Matura from BP all speaking today. And they're all like quite bearish. They spoke about, and I quote this, a tepid recovery in oil demand, flat prices over the coming months or years due to the coronavirus pandemic. So that might have something to do with quite a bearish outlook from the top oil boys who are at this conference today. So that might be filtering through to the oil price.
David, over to you on that one. Whenever Goldman Sachs comes out with any forecast, whether it be oil or gold or stock market. Exactly. They've already positioned themselves. So please come in on the Goldman Sachs story.
They're long up to their eyeballs.
Yes. Exactly.
But you know, you've got different dynamics in it. So the oil dynamics are completely different from the platinum dynamics, which is going to be governed by demand for, by motor vehicle manufacturers. And then you've got the difference even there between platinum and palladium. And palladium, there's a shortage. Then you've got gold and silver, which are proxies for the dollar or for cash. And then you've got copper, which is a genuine – copper and iron ore, which are genuine metals that are governed by demand mainly from China, but for industrial demand. So you've got quite a few of them playing out in different directions.
I must say oil has been frustrating as well. I mean, I used to trade oil quite actively, and oil used to be one of the sort of original – I mean, it's the most traded commodity in the world, and it's quite a nice little sort of instrument to trade. But recently it's displayed similar sort of qualities that the Fed has done with bonds and stuff. That I mean, there's such a large part of the price of oil premium which is dominated by OPEC, you know. So a lot of, you know, they keep on coming in and cutting and manipulating. They've probably known this for years, but more so than most. They're very involved in trying to keep his oil price above $40 a barrel, I think. So it's not just an old-fashioned supply and demand case anymore, unfortunately.
Nick, when we were speaking this morning...
I don't think they can let it go, hey, Lindsay. I don't think they can let it go too far below 40 now.
Nick, we were talking this morning and there was nothing on the Stock Exchange News Service announcement. There's been a couple of things since we spoke on the opening. One is Ascendis, and the share price down around about 11-12%. I mean, this share has fallen from... I don't know.
I was actually speaking to a client about it this morning when it came out. It's a difficult one. I mean, I was actually saying, you're saying, well, is it a buy? So I said, look, you know, it might be one of those ones where, you know, it might be one of these ones that goes private, you know, because they're stable of stuff. David, I mean, you said this for a while. There's so many on our bourse that could probably go private and private equity deals. Yes. And I think this could be one of them. I mean, this is now, I mean, it's a, where do you start? I mean, it's come from, it was a market darling for, I mean, how many years? They're stable of what they've actually got in their sort of portfolio of stuff. It's actually quite interesting. They've got quite a lot of exposure to sports nutrition, you know, the sports business, you know, those powdered protein shakes and all the rest of it. Quite a large section of herbal products and homeopathic stuff. And so I was doing a little homework on it today. It's actually not a bad set of stuff, but it's I just don't know where they go to from here. I mean, they've got a lot of debt, geared up to the eyeballs. You know, the market cap of 370 million.
Haven't
rand.
They got,
I mean,
I think stuff
some of
the as
stuff,
well have they got,
yeah, they
kids?
Do they do, and superfoods as well. But I mean, some of this stuff in here, you got to think it's probably worth 500 million odd. I mean, it's got a market cap of 370, so it's just fallen out of favor. It's out of love. I don't know, and they got involved in a whole lot of CFDs and single stock futures, and their coast to coast, which was the private equity deal, which was backing them as well. So it's just messy. But I think for someone who wants to take a little bit of risk, I'm talking about a private equity team out there, I think it's quite a nice company to take a stab at. I mean, it's 370 million market cap now. I mean, it's not a big ask for some big emerging market fund.
Well, that's bigger than ArcelorMittal and probably bigger than Nampak at the moment.
Spoiled for choice out there.
But I can almost sense you shaking your head, David, when Nick says, have a look at it. You're not going to look at it, are you?
No, not at all.
No, I mean, look, we don't own it either.
I'm not criticizing. It's just that it's too small to really get involved. And also, the kind of product, I must say, I've always been amazed or amused when you go into somewhere like Dis-Chem and you just see shelf after shelf of these powders that people drink, you know, to kind of bulk themselves up and build up their muscles. And then they go to the thousands of different vitamins. And I remember Professor Harry Seftel, if you can remember him, Lindsay, he always used to talk about these kind of products. You know, he says you take these pills and you pee about them. You go and pay fortune for them and then go to the toilet and pee out
the most expensive wee in the world, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. Anyway, so we're not touching that one.
I must say, doctors, nah, I'm not touching that.
All right. But Nick, you make a good point because of the NAV story and the market cap, etc.
Yeah, so it's just a heads up. And we don't have any exposure at Sun. I don't own them myself. I've got a couple of clients. Look at it. I was just commenting that I think, you know, from where it's come and for what it's actually got on offer from a couple of their brands, you know, it might be, I mean, it's highly speculative. Let's leave it at that. Speculative stock.
Yes, indeed. Any other stocks on your radar today, David? Anything you saw?
Come on, David, Mediclinic.
Mediclinic or Netcare?
I mean, Netcare came out, yeah.
Netcare. Look, I like their commentary, I must say, but I didn't like their results.
Sorry, I missed that one. What time did it come out? I do apologize.
No, about 10 o'clock and that. It was just
10 o'clock on the dot, yeah.
It was in 11 months. And what I liked about it is that, you know, they did say that they've learned a lot. And it's really about the treatment of patients. And, you know, initially they had about 35% of the patients that they've treated in high care and intensive care. And what I liked about it is that they say, look, they're learning a lot. They don't need, you know, ventilators or critical care. A lot can be treated at home. And I found that quite encouraging. But the results, you know, they had a close down and they've been hurt dramatically by closing down. They make their margins in the operating theater. Mm. You know, they make their margins by admitting people.
And what they call it, sort of planned procedures.
Non-critical ones. Oh, yes, no, you've just made me slip through my mind now. Mm. But elective. So, you know, all those kind of elective surgeries have been put on hold, and that's cost them a fortune. So they'll come back. You know, they'll come back when things normalize. But, I mean,
I think this is maybe in David Shapiro's recovery basket, maybe, you know, because this they will come back.
Yeah.
They're very cash flow positive. It's trading on a PE of less than 9. I don't know if this dividend's sustainable or not at current levels, but, I agree. I think this is one for, it's very different. Their debt as well, they haven't got much. Their debt is sort of half what their market or something. So I think it's one for the books as well.
You mentioned Mediclinic, Nick, and interestingly, at about 7 o'clock last night, I conducted an interview with Yanni Durant, who is the CEO of Remgro, and obviously Mediclinic, one of their big holdings. Now, what do we think of that one? Because it seems to me that they're going more the unlisted route, and it's almost as though it's going to become a private equity fund. And I said to Yanni, I said, are you doing this because people are objecting to your fees? And he corrected me there. He says, we don't charge a fee. We do this, and this. But it does seem to me they're getting away from the listed instruments and going more into the private stuff. Well, David, maybe you can take this
up. That's where they used to be. Mm. You know, that's where they used to be. If you wanted to, when you bought Remgro in the olden days, you got what is today Richemont, although, you know, it was a tough journey to get to where they are today at the Richemont. You got British American Tobacco. You got a whole basket of really good businesses that have now been unbundled. At one stage, I think there was even Goldfields in it, you know, but they've changed direction to a large extent. Incidentally, I think it's in Renette that they charge their, you know, their management fees, I think, which they learned from Sunlum. They learned down there in Sunlum. What's it from the ex-Sunlum?
Ooh, so get that knife out of Nick Kunz's back.
They've retracted on that. They've come back on that. They're not raising money. Your ex-bosses. And which is the right thing to do. I think it's the right thing to do. But anyway, Lindsay, there's nothing left there. There's nothing of substance that you can get your teeth into. And I think that worries. They've got a few, you know, they've got a bit of RCL. I don't know if they have got RCL in it or if they unbundled that completely.
No, they've still got RCL.
I think that was my criticism when I was chatting to Lindsay when he said he was interviewing. And I said, well, you know, questions to ask is, you know, a lot of the quality stuff have either been unbundled or what they do hold, a lot of them is listed anyway. You can buy a couple of the stuff on the market anyway. There's nothing that, like, when you went to look at these investment holding companies, because they were something you wanted to get a hold of that you couldn't get anywhere else. And I think that's lost its luster a little bit.
I feel that with PSG, the same thing. There's no reason to buy PSG. Yeah. I don't care about the discounts, and those discounts persist. And now the big worry, the big concern is now the process NASPERS versus Tencent. It hasn't closed, and you know, investors are starting to get a bit agitated.
When it first unbundled, it's almost a year ago to the day when they unbundled. And I remember someone saying to one of the clever analysts saying, they're doing this to close the gap. They keep on telling us they want to close the discount. Says, what happens if it doesn't close? Who says it's going to close? Saying that this should realize value is going to close this discount. And I remember someone saying, well, you know, the markets do what they want to do. Just because you have money doesn't say it's going to close. And it hasn't. It's exactly.
I avoid all of those because, you know, history has showed that those gaps never close. If anything, they get wider.
And sometimes they go to 40-50% in some cases.
But why? Can anyone explain why? And is it only when you unbundle a company and sell all the moving parts that it does close by definition? Why is there this gap? Why can't people say, goodness me, 40-50% or 15-20%, close it and make some money? Why is that?
You know what? It happens in Berkshire Hathaway as well. You know, it's the same kind of story. If you look at the fundamental or what they call the intrinsic value, it's way lower. I mean, it's way the trading price is way lower than the intrinsic value. You know, and it's I think people want to go for the direct operating businesses.
That's happened for decades. I mean, I was trading in Sweden many, many decades ago, and there was a company there called Investa, and it was the largest holding company. It was owned by sort of old Swedish sort of business royalty, and had a share in Volvo and a share in Nokia and a share in Ericsson and all the rest of it. And it always traded at 10-15% discount. Everyone used to scratch their heads and go, do this. It never changes. People, if they want to, especially with these holding companies, look at PSG. You know, majority of those quality shares you can buy directly on the JSE. Like, why would you go through a holding company to get a hold of them, even the discount or no discount, buy them direct. Yeah. And I think history's shown, as you said, David, these gaps very rarely close.
Okay, let's have a look at some closing gaps on the JSE according to my screen. And it's not 15-minute delayed anymore because the market is closed. It's Telkom, up 7%. Goodness knows why. That would be my biggest short of any stock on the JSE.
No idea. Going to
15 or 12. AECI up 4.6%. NEPI Rockcastle up 4.33%. SAPI up 4%. And Harmony up nearly 4%. On the downside, Hammerson, these poor shareholders, the poor Treasury Department at Hammerson must be... I mean, there must be
top of the leaderboard. There
must be in padded cells by now. It's up or it's down every day. Today down 10.25%. Capital & Counties down 5.3%. Sasol down 3.3%. And Glencore coming in with a 3.2% loss. Nick, any stories out there amongst the stocks that I've just mentioned, or any outside of those that you've seen?
No, just the one that popped up. You didn't mention Sasol down 3.25%. You know, very weak today. I mean, despite the oil price and obviously the rand's against it, but it's been sort of knocking around this 130 level. It's really quite far off those 180 days we saw a month or two ago. That sort of was raised my sort of concern. And then, of course, the JSE Limited as well, 115.80, was out close to 200 a few years ago, down 3% today. And I'm not surprised. I mean, given yesterday's sort of dismal volume, and today as well, a really slowing volume. So JSE Limited also on my sort of watch list as well.
Okay, let's close with the – well, not just close. I've got a couple of things I want to say after this, but give us the closing indices, please, Nick Kunze.
Yeah, so a bit of a rubbishy day after yesterday's nice bounce. But anyway, 0.39% down, 54,506 on the all share. The top 40.5% down, 258 lower. Still above 50,000, 50,319. And it was a bit of a mixed bag on the JSE today. Real estate, 0.7% higher. Financials with that firm Rand, they were 0.5% higher as well. And healthcare also up 0.08. Downside industrials were, they were kind of flat. Basic materials down 1%. Consumer on cyclicals down 1.7, and energy shares with that lower oil price and Sasol, that index down 2.85%, and volume traded was a very, very disappointing 16.97 billion.
16.97, 17. Just before you go, Dave, before you go with your comment, I just want Nick Kunze, while you're talking, to Google two people. Number one, Michael Flynn, and look at a picture of him. And number two, I want you to look at Chris Hughton.
Michael Flynn, is that F-Y-N-N?
F-L-Y-N-N, have a look at that.
Okay.
Have you seen the picture?
Okay.
And now go to this other chap, Chris Hughton, and it's spelled H-U-G-H-T-O-N. Chris Hughton, football manager. Have a look at that.
That's me.
Don't spoil it. have you got Chris Hughton there, please? Nick, have you...
I have.
Okay, in that case, David, over to you, please.
he was great when he played for Spurs.
Yes, he was. He was, he was brilliant.
Who's he managing at the moment?
What do you mean who's... no, he's out of a job. He got sacked from Brighton last season, I think.
I liked him.
Which is
a
shame.
He's a gentleman.
Yeah, he's Brighton Hove.
Anyway, David, you were going to say something. I interrupted.
The last point I wanted to mention is we haven't spoken about the job numbers that came out today.
Oh, my goodness, of course. Go on.
No, they couldn't gather all the information, so I don't think one can take the positive out of them that the unemployment rate has fallen to 23%. I think the sadness is how many jobs were lost, you know, and it's a mammoth amount, and that's going to, as soon as things get back to normal and we're able to get the proper statistics coming out, I think you're going to find unemployment over 30% plus.
Hey. Yeah, it was miles out. I saw a note from she put a very good note out, and she said if you look at the majority of some of the, if you sort of dig between the numbers, it was a number of people who had given up looking for work. So they actually just, they've gone straight onto social grants and not even looking anymore. So the unemployment was actually closer to sort of 43 or 42%. So it was not a very nice set of numbers. Very disappointing. But again, I just want to reiterate what David said before we go, that be very careful reading into these numbers. I think Stats SA are battling to get an accurate reading at the moment.
I spoke to Annabelle Bishop, Chief Economist at Investec, this afternoon on this subject, and you can listen to it on strictlybusinesspodcast.com, and it was a really good interview because we were sort of nervously laughing about the fact that it's gone down from 30% to 23%, the unemployment rate in South Africa. But that's because, as you rightly said, Nick, I think there's 5.4, 5.5 million people that are not unemployed, but they're economically inactive, which is the same thing. If you're not economically active, then you are unemployed. But Stats SA, after 2 months of delays, haven't collated the data in the traditional way. So, in fact, she said she thought the unemployment rate was closer to 45%, not 23%, which is huge. And it's horrible. Nearly half of the working population or potential working population in South Africa doesn't have a job. That is really scary, don't you think?
No, and how? And how? Because it's causing all kinds of social problems, and it will cause, and it's going to absorb whatever growth we do make here, whatever, you know, progress we make here is going to be absorbed by having to give more and more social grants and look after these people. And yet we don't hear anything on the reform side. Everything drags along. There doesn't seem to be an urgency to do anything, but we'll leave that for another day.
And the clock is ticking, guys. The clock is ticking.
It really is, yes. And it's ticking towards the 3 a.m. debate this morning.
Yes!
Yes, can't wait. So anyway, started. Donald Trump has said in the last couple of hours, it says here, our great First Amendment and great Second Amendment, our right to worship God, and so much more, comes down to one vote on the court. Ted Cruz has a fantastic new book, One Vote Away. It's the best book to read as we fight, etc., etc. But he's never read a book in his life. But anyway, let's
he's written lots.
He's ghost-written lots. Ghost-written. And I've ghost-read them as well. But, gentlemen, Nick, I just want you to... I think we'll start a competition now. David Shapiro lookalikes. I mean, I don't know how many handsome men there are out there that look like David Shapiro.
What was the one?
But Mike, we found two. We found Michael Flynn, Nick, and also Chris Hughton. Aren't they dead ringers for Chris Shapiro?
What is the expression? Is it a Google-danger?
A doppelganger.
Doppelganger, that's right.
Yes, you should know as a German.
That's your twin. Yeah.
So there are lots of David Shapiros out there, everybody. Be very careful. David Shapiro is the deputy chairman of Sasson Securities. Go to Michael Flynn and to Chris Hughton, and you'll see what he looks like and put him up. And Nick Kunze, I'll try and find one of you as well. Nick Kunze is from Sandham Private Wealth, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. That podcast was brought to you by IG, a global leader in online trading and authorized financial services provider. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.